happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
I'm Andy Hum.
And filling in for Ann Northrup, I am Chris Cooper.
Nice to have you back, Chris. We'll talk to you in a minute. Did you have an interesting summer?
Oh, slightly busy.
Well, let's go to the headlines first.
All right.
Some good news. Out LGBTQ candidates have advanced in Utah and Tennessee.
Our favorite person, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, appoints a far-right Moms for Liberty founder to a government post.
And staying in Florida, Miami-Dade School Board sided with the Proud Boys on an LGBTQ resolution.
Meanwhile, federal judges in Georgia and Florida reversed decisions protecting gender-affirming care for minors.
California establishes the nation's first Transgender History Month and passing a slew of pro-LGBTQ bills.
And in a different kind of transitioning, we have new things to report on Carl Nassib, the NFL football player who's out, Karine Jean-Pierre, and Robin Roberts.
In Ireland, pro-LGBTQ counter-protesters protected a Cork library from yet another anti-LGBTQ assault.
A head of state has come out. For which country? We'll have to find out later.
And I've got good news for older people living with HIV.
And we'll also hear from Steve Johnson, who was the brother of a gay man named Scott, who worked for decades to prove that Scott was murdered in Australia in 1988. And there's now a four-part Hulu series coming out about that. And so we'll talk about that.
It's terrific. But Chris, let's start by catching up with you. I was with you last night at the National Arts Club where you were signing copies of your book. There you are with the first out assembly member in the state of New York, Deborah Glick, signing her copy. You were terrific last night. Let's put a copy of your book up. Notes, that's Better Living Through Birding, Notes from a Black Man in the Natural World. And you had your TV series on this summer, Extraordinary Birder with Christian Cooper. So talk about how all this, and that took you all over the country. So talk about how this has all gone for you and how it's changed your life.
Well, it's been a whirlwind, really. I mean, when I wrote the book, I thought, who the heck wants to read my memoir? And then suddenly it's on the New York Times bestseller list. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I'd love to take all the credit. I think I wrote a halfway decent book, but, a lot of that comes from having two big corporate titans, Disney and Random House, sort of as the wind beneath your wings, to use a metaphor. It's been very exciting. I've got to go a lot of places, meet a lot of people, and just the reception has been so warm for both the book and for the TV show, which is still running. You can still stream it on Disney Plus. And we're waiting to find out if we get a second season. So fingers crossed.
I was going to say, this took you to Puerto Rico, New York City, boldly going to the top of the George Washington Bridge to look at some birds, Hawaii, Palm Springs, Washington, D.C., and Alabama. How did it feel being gay and black in Alabama these days?
Well, that's my favorite episode actually for just that reason, because, I'm a northern boy. My family is northerners for a couple of generations, but you go far enough back in the history of any African Americans and our roots are in the South. And my dad's side of the family actually came from Alabama, but I'd never been. So actually, a year before the show, I had gone at the invitation of Alabama Audubon because I'm like, I'm not going to get a better chance to go and see what it's like. And it was so eye-opening. Walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge was just mind-blowing, where, all that civil rights history went down and where our people were beaten bloody on Bloody Sunday. Just the being in that context, being black and gay, and then meeting other people, both you know, being in Birmingham, where I was shocked that, you know, there were rainbow flags and the windows everywhere. But then when you really think about it, that's the way it is in a lot of the country. The big cities are blue, but they're surrounded by the sea of red in the countryside. So, you know, it was really instructive in a lot of ways. And the collision of things bird-related and race-related and family-related, which you wouldn't think would happen, and yet there they were. And so that was really a fascinating experience.
Well,
and we were able to recreate it for the TV show.
We're all thrilled for your, you know, the exposure that you're getting, because you're bringing a lot of messages. You're integrating a lot of things into your book and into your TV series. That, you know, yes, of course, the TV, it's, you know, a lot of it is about birding, but it's about a lot more social history in this country.
It's a memoir. And so it's, you know, it's not a book about birding, though birding is shot through it because that's shot through my life. But then I also try to put things in context. You know, I talk about the history of Central Park and, you know, how African racism and African-American history are bound up in that park. So,
yeah. Central Park used to be a black settlement, essentially, in New York. And they had a clear out when the park was built in the 1850s. Okay, speaking of New York, we marked the 22nd anniversary of 9/11 catastrophe here, and at the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Now, the president attended the last two. Up at Ground Zero was the vice president, with even Rudy Giuliani and Ron DeSantis in New York for that. But Trump attended none of the ceremonies, because if he can't be the center of attention, he wants none of it.
Right.
Now, 9/11. Here in New York, we have a tradition of on that day and into the night, they shine beams of light up into the sky, and it's very moving, and it's, you know, it's the emptiness of the loss of the Twin Towers. But because, and I think this is important, because you are interested in birds and care about birds, how does this affect them, and what did you do about it?
Well, it's interesting because 9/11 happened right at the peak of the fall migration, when birds are heading south, particularly songbirds, and a lot of the songbirds migrate at night. And they navigate by the stars, and they can become disoriented by bright light sources like, wow, those two beams of light shining up into the sky, which, you know, touches all of our hearts. But it was actually potentially turning into a major bird killer during migration. So New York City Audubon, of which I am, full disclosure, a board member, this is before my time, though, worked actually with the Tribute in Light people who put on that display every year. Instead of, you know, fighting about it or suing each other or whatever, they devised a way to work together so that volunteers from New York City Audubon go there at night and monitor the density of birds. They count physically all night. Volunteers are staying there, counting how many birds. When the density gets too great and the birds are trapped and swirling around in those lights, they'll turn off the lights for 20 minutes to allow the birds to disperse, and then they'll turn it back on. And so that was one of the few nice things to come out of 9/11, is just that nod to human cooperation on the behalf of not making more death come out of 9/11. Really wonderful. And in fact, New York City Audubon is fighting for a Lights Out initiative to turn off lights in buildings throughout New York City. So if you're a New York City resident, that's something you can support now, is that new law. And in any city you live in, fight for Lights Out laws and initiatives that get people to turn out lights, unnecessary lighting in their buildings at night during migration.
Turn out the lights and don't let the door hit you from behind. Okay, well, let's get to the rest of the LGBTQ news and AIDS news. We've got some good news in the race for mayor of, are you ready for it? Ogden, Utah. An out guy named Taylor Knuth, K-N-U-T-H, was the top vote getter and advances to a runoff on November 21st with a guy named Ben Nadosky, a member of the city council. Knuth is currently Salt Lake City's deputy director for arts and economic development and a longtime community organizer in Ogden.
Meanwhile, in Tennessee, all right, I'm going to say that again. In Tennessee, a transgender activist is poised to join the Nashville Metro Council. So that's their city council in an at-large seat. Her name is Olivia Hill, and she is, get ready, a combat veteran, plumbing pipe fitter, diesel mechanic, gas turbine specialist, welder, high voltage electrician, and union shop steward. And she is poised to become that first transgender breakthrough in that state.
She's 57 years old, a single parent of two adult children and four grandchildren. She'll be joining a city council whose powers have been gutted by the right-wing Republican legislature. This is what they do to Democrat cities. They just take their powers away. You know, they fire DAs, that kind of stuff. And, of course, she famously won a discrimination suit against Vanderbilt University. She was the senior supervisor of the power plant, and they were trying to get rid of her because she was trans, and she won.
She's completing her book chronicling her life with gender dysphoria and her transition, which began in 2018.
All right. We've got a bunch of Florida stories. Let's get to one of them. Ron DeSantis, he's sinking in the polls for the Republican nomination, but he still thinks the path to victory is to run to the right of Trump. This week, he appointed the co-founder of the ultra right-wing Moms for Liberty, Tina Descovich, to the Florida Commission on Ethics, which guarantees that DeSantis' own corruption will not be investigated. Moms for Liberty are leaders in book banning and protesting LGBTQ inclusion and discussions of race in schools. It's a grasstops group heavily funded by right-wing plutocrats. Descovich herself was defeated for school board in 2020 in Brevard County by Democrat Jennifer Jenkins, who worries about political retaliation from the Ethics Commission now, which is stacked with PACs.
Well, and it's something, you know, we'll see repeatedly in a lot of these stories. And obviously, you know, if you watch Gay USA regularly, you know, Andy, you and Ann talk about it every week, how it's the normalization of these extreme right-wing radicals and how they're being brought into the actual machinery of government by these guys who are racing to the bottom to prove just how conservative they can be because they have their eye on a higher office and know you can't get there without the extreme base of the Republican Party behind you. So it's really, really making things ugly. And one place where it stayed ugly is in Miami. The Miami-Dade School Board actually voted not to honor LGBTQ plus History Month this year. They came to the same determination last year. It was a vote of 5-3 to decide not to recognize it. But it was particularly contentious this year. A lot of back and forth between the two sides. And the presence of Proud Boys there standing by to intimidate people who wanted to speak. So more than 100 people had signed up to speak and to be heard. And meanwhile, you have these bully boys.
Keep that around picture up. These Proud Boys show up with T-shirts that say, shoot your local pedophile. Shoot your local pedophile. I mean, it's you know, look, I mean, nobody's in favor of child molestation.
And the nerve that one of them has, I'm seeing one of them has the nerve to have Uhuru, Swahili for freedom, written on their shirt. I just want to smack that word off them.
Well, most of them are wearing masks. Also in Florida, the Federal Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights has opened up an investigation into that Christopher Rufo. He's the right-wing nut who anti-LGBTQ campaigner and racist campaigner, in his role as trustee appointed by DeSantis of the New College in Sarasota, for removing gender-neutral signs from restrooms, which students tried to replace, defunding DEI and gender studies programs, and his misgendering the former DEI director. Now, this, of course, is the kind of conflict that Rufo, welcomes with the Biden administration. Complaints against Rufo were filed by students, faculty, and staff. Rufo posted the complaints on X and got the thumbs up from Elon Musk, whose trans daughter has disowned him.
I will be quite honest. I refuse to go to Florida and have for the last 10 years. But I have never been more happy that I made that decision than lately, as things just get worse and worse there. And I think as many of you who can afford to make a similar choice to, you know, I know some people have relatives down there, retired parents, whatever, so you may not have the option. But if you do, don't go to Florida. Vote with your feet. I've stopped drinking orange juice. I drink pomegranate juice now instead. It's better for you. And, you know, if you want a warm weather vacation, go to Palm Springs, California. It's wonderful.
Okay. Speaking of California, a county in San Bernardino halted the policy of the Chino School District, a county judge in San Bernardino halted Chino School District, dominated by the religious right. The policy required parents to be notified of their children changing their gender identification or pronouns at school. The response to the lawsuit versus Chino by the state attorney general, Rob Bonta, Judge Thomas Garza questioned how the policy protects students. You say you're doing this to protect students, or you're protecting, you know.
And while we're in California and while we're talking about students there, California lawmakers sent a whole bunch of pro-LGBTQ school bills to the governor. One of them is aimed at prohibiting school districts from banning LGBTQ-themed books and curriculum. So that's the opposite approach of Florida. That's authored by gay assembly member Corey Jackson. It prohibits the censorship and removal of books, instructional materials, or curriculum resources that the state law requires to be reflected in instruction. Newsom is expected to sign it. There's another bill, a Safe and Supportive Schools Act, that's authored by gay assembly member Rick Chavez-Zabur. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly, but I hope I did. And it mandates that teachers and credentialed staff who serve public school pupils in grade 7 to 12 annually take at least 1 hour of online training in LGBTQ cultural competency beginning in 2025 to 2026. So in other words, they'll know something about us so that they know how to treat us with respect. Wow, shocking. And then another bill in this slew of bills that has gone over to the governor, the Senate, approved or adopted by a 32-7 vote, a law that requires K through 12 schools in California to provide at least one accessible all gender restroom for students to use safely and comfortably during school hours. That was sponsored by State Senator Josh Newman. So, you know, really good things for schools happening in California, in marked contrast to places like.
There are about 10 other LGBTQ bills that they passed, and I'm going to link to it in our email. You can go to gayusatv.org and sign up for our weekly emails, and we'll send you that link and a preview of the show. My favorite bill that they passed, and we did this in New York City, too. It requires all single-use restrooms in businesses and restaurants to be gender neutral. I mean, I've always wanted this because you sometimes go to the, you know, back of a restaurant and there's single-use restrooms, one mark men, one mark women, and, you know, somebody's holding up one and you have to wait for your own gender thing. It's ridiculous. We all use the same restroom at home.
Quite honestly, I think that was de facto happening anyway. People weren't waiting. If it was single use, they would just use whatever restroom was free. So.
I wasn't waiting. I got yelled at once in a while. But in California at Cajun Valley School District, which is in San Diego County, they asked teachers there to remove LGBTQ safe space posters from classrooms. How much can you hate these kids?
Yeah, no, that's...
Speaking of books, did you watch this video? At a Senate hearing, Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana read really sexually graphic excerpts from All Boys Aren't Blue and Gender Queer, two of the most controversial books in libraries. So if the books are banned in your library or school, you can at least find the best parts in the congressional record.
All right. Well, sticking to California just a little bit longer, California lawmakers voted to end the travel ban to states with anti-LGBTQ laws. There's a lot of reasons for that. I think the main one is that there are just so many states with anti-LGBTQ laws. It's more than half the states now. It's 26 states. So yeah. I think it became kind of untenable. The way they're spinning it is that it was hampering California's ability for outreach to try to counteract some of these anti-gay laws, and also hampering their ability for other state progressive policies like paying for travel for women seeking an abortion to come to California and get one from a state that has now banned abortion. So that's why they voted to ditch that. Gavin Newsom, I don't think, has said how he's going to land on that. So we have to wait and see. And then also in California, there was, they declared the first Transgender History Month.
And we have some video on the press conference about that.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our press conference announcing a statewide Transgender History Month in the state of California. My name is Honey Mahogany. I am both the district director for Assemblymember Haney, but I'm also here in my capacity today at this lunch hour as the chair of the San Francisco Democratic Party. And let me tell you that all across this country, we have been seeing on the trans attacks on the trans community, but it's not just in other states. Even here in California, where we have a sanctuary state, where we have an overwhelmingly Democrats representing us in the Capitol, we are still seeing acts of violence, still seeing attempts at legislating against our community. And so it's really important to us that we stop spreading misinformation about the trans community and take this opportunity to actually tell the truth and educate people about who we are and what we need. And so without further ado, I want to bring forward to the stage somebody who is a champion for the trans community, someone who I've had the honor of working with for many, many years. Please welcome Assemblymember Matt Haney.
Thank you so much, Honey Mahogany, for your leadership. Honey also left out that Honey is one of the co-founders of the Transgender Cultural District in San Francisco. As long as there has been a California, there have been transgender people here contributing to their communities, making history in expanding civil rights, and helping to build a California that is more inclusive and prosperous for everyone. That is a history today that we are very proud to celebrate, and that California will celebrate and uplift from this year and every year as we declare the first state to have an official Transgender History Month here in our state. Trendsetting again, San Francisco was the first city to declare August as Transgender History Month. And after today, when we vote, California will be the first state to declare officially Transgender History Month in the month of August.
And speaking of the history, the resolution references 1775, when a Spanish soldier observed indigenous men, quote, in the dress, clothing, and character of women who were held in great esteem. And also the Compton's Cafeteria Riot in San Francisco in 1966 by trans patrons 3 years before Stonewall.
And can I say, I want a cool name like Honey Mahogany. I want to be like Raptor Skylord or something like that. I'm going to make it happen. Okay. Meanwhile, bad news for trans people. Well, there was good news in California. In Georgia, a judge reversed her decision, which blocked a ban on gender-affirming care. In other words, a ban was passed in Georgia that prevented youth from getting gender-affirming care. She first ruled to block that ban, and then she reversed that block on the ban, and so now it can take effect. And this is in response to a decision by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals that allowed a similar ban to take effect in Alabama, because these bans are popping up like toxic mushrooms. And really, I have to say, this is sort of really taking, they've really mastered or really sort of absconded with our playbook, with the gay and lesbian playbook. When, you know, we got all these states to pass bans on conversion therapy, quote unquote, reparative therapy on youth in order to protect youth. They've flipped that script on its head and are having way too much success with that, you know, saying, oh, this is to protect youth, to keep them from getting gender affirming care. Of course, the difference being that reparative therapy, quote unquote, conversion therapy is not recognized by medical authorities as having any kind of efficacy. In fact, it's harmful, whereas gender affirming care is recognized as medically necessary. So,
And the decisions by the courts have gone back and forth. Some of them are still on hold from some of the red states, others. So this has got to go to the Supreme Court at some point. And for instance, parents in, I believe it's Alabama, they are appealing to the full 11th Circuit and saying, hey, you know, this is a violation of the law against discriminating on the basis of sex and should be subjected to heightened scrutiny based on Supreme Court decisions. And it violates also, this is very important, a parent's right to make medical decisions for their children, which is supposed to be the watchword of the right wing, parents' rights.
It always shocks me because, you know, they act as if there aren't gay parents, as if there aren't gay queer kids, you know, and when they say they're trying to protect children and they're for parental rights. Well, not everybody's. Makes me very angry.
Let's go back to talking a little bit about books. The Florida Department of Education has banned the children's book, Christian, The Hugging Lion. It's about two men who raise a baby lion in their London apartment. There's no mention of sexuality in the book. The couple is not identified as gay. The authors of the book sued back in June over the banning of their And Tango Makes Three, about two penguins fostering an egg. But the right wing now sees homosexuality under every rock. It used to be communism, but now it's us.
It's very painful. I'm ready to talk about something less triggering for me. If you're ready to talk about Carl Nassib.
Let's finish up with a bit, just a couple of other state news things. All right. If you don't mind, before we
sure, get to, let's do that.
We get to all of our transitions. First of all, I want to say, you know, all these abortion bans are driving doctors out of the states that have them because, you know, they're just fearful that if they help with a high risk pregnancy, they're going to go to jail. So that's happening around the country, like in Idaho and other places. And the Center for Reproductive Rights is suing in Tennessee, Idaho, and Oklahoma on behalf of women who were denied abortion care in medical emergencies, similar to a suit brought in Texas. So, you know, this is what's happening. Okay, now let's see. Maybe we should talk about Pennsylvania. In the Gettysburg School District, the board voted to renew the contract of trans tennis coach after stalling due to the gender identity of Sasha Yates. At a hearing, the boys' tennis team captain, that's Sasha, but the boys' tennis team captain there, and his name was Tristan Smith, accused the board of blatant transphobia for the delay. Yates has coached boys and girls since 2018, has a stellar record. Opponents of Yates falsely charged Yates with changing in the girls' locker room, charges ultimately rejected by the board. The smears came from a MAGA board member, Michelle Sawyers, I think, or Smyers.
Smyers,
who works with Trump's Goebbels, Stephen Miller, and has a history of transphobic remarks. She belongs to Moms for Liberty. Yates said she was very moved by the outpouring of support.
Well, you know, note to the Gettysburg School District Board, if you're going to try to gin up this false controversy over the transgender person and you want to refer to, oh, they may have changed in the girls' locker room, you might want to think about the fact that you already renewed their contract previously after dismissing those charges previously. So it really doesn't make sense to dredge them up again. But that's what Smyers was all about.
Well, if you watch Fox News, you probably know about this. I didn't until I read it online. The right wing is going to have a field day with this, but an elementary school hired Dr. Shane Murnan as the principal at John Glenn Elementary School because Murnan is a drag queen outside of work. The district says that Murnan had 25 years of experience in education and has an outstanding reputation, but the superintendent of schools for Oklahoma wants him fired immediately. Ryan Walters mouthed all the right-wing talking points and saying, parents are concerned with the woke left-wing indoctrination in schools, this gender ideology thrust upon our kids. That's the way they talk about all these issues.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, but there has been no resolution on his fate yet, is there?
No. And in Oklahoma, the largest school districts are opting out of the lesson plans that are being imposed, that are being offered from Prager University, being pushed by Ryan Walters, the school superintendent, including Oklahoma City has opted out. Prager University makes propaganda films downplaying things like slavery.
Yeah, I mean, again, we were, as I said before, this is the normalization of the extreme right wing. It's nice that there's some pushback, but you know, the idea that an organization with no education credentials whatsoever would be accepted to provide educational materials into a school system is nothing short of astonishing. Unless, of course, you happen to know how right wing the United States in red states has gotten. So.
Right. And you've read about how Bud Light was abandoned by MAGA after Bud Light partnered with trans influencer Dylan Mulvaney. And Anheuser-Busch stock went down about 7% for the year, and revenue is down 10% of the second quarter. But Bill Gates thinks it's time to invest in the company. His foundation trust bought 1.7 million shares for $95 million. Gates says, I'm not a beer drinker, but I think this will come back.
Yeah, I mean, to put this into context, I don't know that this is Bill Gates necessarily making a political statement so much as seeing a value, you know, in a stock that is momentarily depressed. So far, it hasn't paid off for him. The stock has continued to slide 2% since he bought it. But he's also bought a stock in other beer brands, too. He bought $1 billion worth of shares in Heineken Holding. So, you know, I think it's just an investment for him. But, you know,
let's get to our transitions. I'd like to start with the civil liberties lawyer, Sarah Wunsch. She died in Massachusetts at the age of 75, survived by her spouse. She's with her there. That's Sarah in the middle, Christine Ernst. She was the deputy legal director of the Massachusetts ACLU for almost three decades, known for very innovative challenges to safeguard a wide range of public behavior issues, from panhandling to hairstyles in schools, a lot of LGBTQ issues. Also persuaded the New York Court of Appeals in 1984 that men may be prosecuted for marital rape, the first time a state court invalidated the marital rape exception, although 12 other states had repealed it. New York was very slow. She was at the Center for Constitutional Rights at the time. Okay.
So Carl Nassib, you guys may remember him. He just retired, a professional football player. So that was his big announcement, that he's decided to retire from football after seven seasons and I think 100 NFL games. And he was a real landmark because he was the first out player who came out while he was still playing. And his retirement happily does not seem to have anything to do with any sort of being pushed out or anything like that, like they did to Colin Kaepernick or anything like that. It's more just a matter of him wanting to move on to the next stage of his life, which is he's putting his attention into his business.
He's got an app called Raise, R-A-Y-Z-E, that helps nonprofits connect with volunteers and organizations. Okay, you know, we told you when out Karine Jean-Pierre, who's President Biden's press secretary, we told her about her longtime partner, former CNN anchor, Suzanne Mauveau. Well, they've just split up after 10 years. They have a 9-year-old daughter they adopted together in 2014 and say they're determined not to let their relationship status affect their daughter, Soleil.
It's funny because I had a moment of a disconnect because she said, I'm a single mom who is co-parenting this amazing kid. And single mom means to me that you're raising the kid alone. But I think what she meant is she is a mom who is single, who is co-parenting this kid. So I was like, wait. Anyway, yes.
We hope she's more precise from the platform and the yes. Washington White House press corps.
And then Robin Roberts, she kind of went the opposite direction, didn't she?
Hello? Are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead. Oh, you want to?
You go ahead. You fill me in. I know she got married.
They did. ABC's Robin Roberts and Amber Lane. They first met in 2005. Lane is a founder of a women's wellness store. They were married in front of 31 guests and later partied with 250 in Connecticut. Guests included Roberts' GMA colleagues as well as Billie Jean King. Out weatherman Sam Champion was the MC for the evening. given Robert's schedule, she gets up at 3:45 a.m. for Good Morning America. They each have their own apartments on the Upper West Side, and they spend three nights a week apart. So they, which can be the secret to a good marriage if you can afford it. Katharine Hepburn said married people shouldn't live together. But again, that's for the rich. I'm not going to talk more about Katharine Hepburn, other than the fact that she was a lesbian and, you know, she was only briefly married to a man. Anyway, okay. International news?
Sure. So Ireland is kind of facing some of the cultural vicissitudes that we're getting in this country with attempts at book banning and stuff like that. And there's been pressure on the Irish library system to ban some books. In Cork, Ireland, the library had been shut down by right-wing protesters twice in a row. Well, they tried to do it a third time, and they were met by hundreds of pro-library, pro-LGBTQ protesters who formed a human shield around the library to block the protesters and keep the library open so that they could perform their normal functions. And that's just a fabulous thing to see, as you can see in the photo.
It was, I'm glad they're standing up to them. They're not closing letting the library be closed because of some protesters. That's ridiculous. All right. In the United Kingdom, the right-wing Home Secretary from the Conservative government, Suella Braverman, she's attacking the police for their, what she calls their activism and lack of impartiality for doing things such as dancing and fraternizing with LGBT activists at Pride. Well, and waving the Progress Pride flag, she said that symbolizes highly contested ideologies. She seems to want to go back to the days when the police turned their backs on us when we marched past them in the LGBT marches. It's an indication that Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, who also has shifted right on trans issues, wants to run on culture war issues as he sinks in the polls. So, familiar story. Braverman also complained that some police took a knee at Black Lives Matter protests and apologized for past institutional racism. All these things, she said, damage public confidence in the police, when the real problem, of course, is police misconduct.
Well, exactly.
LGBTQ people and Black people.
We were targeted for so long, both as Black people and as LGBTQ people. And so the idea that, you know, the police showing a bit of compassion and humanity towards us is somehow taking sides is, I'm not even going to go on because it's going to make me angry. I'm trying not to get angry this show. I'm trying to stay happy and upbeat. I have a happy, upbeat piece of news coming from a country where their prime minister just came out as gay. I'm going to give you a second to guess. The country is?
Well, there are
Andorra.
There are several in the world, but this is?
This is the latest one who just came out is the prime minister of Andorra, Xavier Espo. He said, I am gay and I have never hidden myself. But this is his first public acknowledgement.
He says, nobody ever asked me before.
Exactly. So Andorra is one of the world's smallest microstates. It has a population of about 80,000 people. So we have cities that are bigger here in the States.
But it has the world's largest duty-free.
Yes, which brings in a lot of tourists. Three other nations.
And on the border of France and Spain.
Yes. Three other nations currently have openly gay prime ministers. Luxembourg. Maybe a little bit bigger, Serbia and Ireland, and Latvia's current president is openly gay.
And, this certainly is progress. I mean, this is a country that got marriage equality last year, preceded by civil unions back in 2004. So it's not a backward place. In Washington, D.C., at the Nigerian embassy, a coalition of the National Black Justice Coalition, Black LGBTQ lawmakers, others, they got up there and protested the arrest of more than 200 people in Nigeria for allegedly participating in a gay wedding. And these guys who were arrested face like 14 years in prison if they're convicted. So as the state delegate Gabriel Acevero said, instead of focusing the resources of the state on ending violence and police brutality, it is instead being used to persecute queer Nigerians.
And unfortunately, this is, you know, a pattern we have observed repeatedly in Africa, specifically Uganda, which is like one of the worst. But now it's also taking root in Ghana, which had trended slightly more liberal over the last couple of years, we are told. But now they are jumping on that anti-gay bandwagon, and they are poised to pass a law that would not only make being LGBTQ illegal, which it already is, but it would make identifying as LGBTQ, so not just the activity, but identifying or advocating for LGBTQI rights, a crime. It's being pushed by the Speaker of Ghana's parliament, a guy named Albin Bagbin, and he has vowed to have this bill passed before the end of 2023. It's called the Promotion of Proper Human Sexual Rights and Ghanaian Family Values Bill. And what makes that so ironic is that, as we know, and as you know if you watch this show regularly, it's got nothing to do with Ghanaian family values, but with Mississippi family values and Alabama family values, because that's who's gone over to Africa, these right-wing religious fanatics who failed in the States and who planted the seeds of their intolerance over in Africa, where now, regrettably,
I get that, Chris, it's got to have, it is received. The people embrace it. And they reject colonialism. And of course, a lot of these original anti-gay laws came from the colonial powers, but they embrace this thing. They embrace these right-wing religions. So, you know, how is it not their responsibility?
Oh, no, I'm not absolving them of their responsibility, but I'm saying it's ironic that they're saying, oh, this is to promote Ghanaian family values, when in fact it's been exported, just as they say, oh, we don't want your Western values here. Well, actually, you're adopting Western intolerant values.
We've tried to reason with them on that level, but it is rejected. I think homophobia is indigenous.
It's indigenous, and it's also used politically, as we all know, just the way it's used here, to whip up, you know, hate to prop up somebody's political regime. The one thing we can all do is, for example, I support an organization called Rainbow Railroad. You can look them up, rainbowrailroad.org, and they specialize in, you know, for lack of a better analogy, an underground railroad to get the most vulnerable refugees out of these places and into safety in Western countries like Canada and the United States.
So, yeah, I mean,
rainbowrailroad.org is definitely worth looking at.
I mean, on our Gay USA Facebook page, I'm constantly getting notes from people who want to get out of various countries from, you know, all over the world, but many from Africa, and they're just desperate at this point. Yeah. All right. AIDS news?
Sure.
I got some good news from middle-aged and older people living with HIV. This new study shows that a statin drug lowered their risk of heart attacks and strokes by a third. There are well over 500,000 people over 50 living with HIV, and two-thirds of their deaths come from causes other than HIV. Though HIV contributes to liver disease, kidney problems, cognitive decline, some cancers, and three-quarters of them have heart disease. Under Dr. Fauci, the NIH invested $100 million into a randomized trial of this statin drug. It's called REPRIEVE. Fauci said the results of the study are even better than he expected. The full findings will be presented in November. So more than 40 years into the plague, the U.S. is finally paying attention to other things that shorten the lives of people with HIV.
Well, and just to give a little bit more context on this, Andy, I don't think the drug is called REPRIEVE. I think the trial was called REPRIEVE. And statins are a class of drugs. So there's a whole bunch of statins. There's atorvastatin, pitavastatin, pravastatin. And their common names are very familiar. Lipitor, Crestor, their brand names, you know, are very familiar. Because they are some of the most prescribed drugs in the world. They are the go-to drugs for lowering your cholesterol. And they've been around for like 40 years. They're well studied. So it's not like it's some new treatment. It's something we've had in our tool belt for a long time that's that doctors are super familiar with. But what the study showed was that even in people who normally wouldn't be prescribed statins, if you gave it to them, if they were HIV positive, you got that more than one third decrease in mortality from cardiovascular disease, which is what gets people. If they live long enough and don't get die from AIDS because they've gotten treatment, they get it from cardiovascular disease. And this is helping to reduce that. So it's a huge plus and a huge win for long-term survivors with HIV. So it's very promising.
I just hope people with HIV/AIDS and the rest of us can survive the government shutdown that is looming down in Washington under Speaker McCarthy, who can't keep his caucus together. And of course, has now announced the impeachment, investigation into Biden, because even though he said he wouldn't do it unless there was a vote, he's not having a vote. But anyway, this week, protesters from the AIDS Service and Advocacy Group Housing Works protested in his office on Monday, demanding that he reauthorize PEPFAR, the longstanding program that provides aid to 15 African nations, as well as some in Asia and Caribbean, to curb and treat the HIV virus. It has saved 25 million lives, but the right-wing Republicans want to end it unless further restrictions on funding are imposed, cutting it off to any agency that so much as counsels on abortion. 7 protesters there were arrested. Thank you for being there for us.
Yes, and it's important to remember that PEPFAR was actually the first George Bush's brainchild. This was one of the good things he left us. And so it's a Republican initiative. It had bipartisan support, but somehow they've managed to tangle it up in abortion where it doesn't belong.
So, well, as with Tommy Tuberville and all the military appointments.
Exactly.
And, I have to say about that, everybody condemns Tommy Tuberville. I condemn the Senate for not getting rid of that stupid rule that one senator can block all action on something. That's nuts. But they don't want to give up their prerogatives, so they're letting Tommy Tuberville do this. They're letting him do this. Stop it.
Well, hopefully this will push them over the edge and cause them to change that rule. And dare we even hope the filibuster, that will die a fiery death? I mean,
so many things need to change if we are going to have a more perfect union. I was interested to read on AIDS. There's a new survey that GLAAD did. They said it's on HIV stigma, but it asked people, different generations, are you knowledgeable about HIV/AIDS? And those in Generation X, born between 1965 and 80, are the most knowledgeable. 62% say that they're knowledgeable, followed by millennials, 1981 to 96, 50%, and us baby boomers, 1946 to 64, 46%. Generation Z, born in 1997 to 2012, is sadly at 34%, and they have the highest rates of transmission among those 13 to 35. They're 57% of new cases. So, and of course, they're the most sexually active. But it's AIDS education is dying. I mean, we had a big push for it in the 90s. And then when it was a hot issue, and it's gone by the wayside.
Yeah, all I can think of is that old phrase, those who are unaware of history are doomed to repeat it.
So. Absolutely. Well, entertainment news?
Sure.
At the 92nd Street YMHA in New York, I just want to announce this. Trans Jeopardy champ Amy Schneider is going to be in conversation with Harvey Fierstein on Wednesday, October 2nd. Amy has a new book out, In the Form of a Question, The Joys and Rewards of a Curious Life. Of course, she's out trans hero. Okay.
Awesome.
Now, I saw the first, I don't know if you've watched this, I saw the first 2 episodes at a screening. It's online now.
I do not have Hulu, so I have not been able to see it.
All right, let's get Hulu. Of Never Let Him Go, about the 1988 murder of American gay man Scott Johnson, who was a brilliant mathematician, thrown off a cliff from a gay cruising area in Manly, Australia, which outside of Sydney, which is, by the way, the hometown of our sometime co-host, Maren Johns, who lived there. It's a gripping story on how Scott's older brother, Steve Johnson, pursued justice for him for decades, and Steve spoke at the New York premiere last week.
As you saw in the film, I had a lot of help and a lot of support. I have a very loving family and group of friends, and the case just attracted more friends. I often wonder whether I have more friends in Australia than I do in the U.S. There are so many people that I've gotten to know and that have seen this as important and helped me. So this isn't a solo adventure of mine. It certainly seemed like something I could never let go of. Great title, by the way. And Scott would have done the same for me. You know, it was, you know, my son, who's very sorry he couldn't be here, and also sorry he's not in the film. He was on the West Coast and not quite as available. Ruben, who you see in the film a couple of times and took some of the footage, I was talking to him a few years ago when it looked like it was we weren't going to get a police investigation. This was in 2018, before Welsford kicked off, and so I was thinking about how we would tell the story, and I thought of it in terms of the seven samurai, except there were 12 or 15 of these magnificent people that joined forces to get us at least the conclusion that Scott died by homicide. And he said, this isn't the right story. It's really the Lord of the Rings and you're Frodo. Don't tell anybody I said this, but I'm Frodo. That you were given this mission that you had no choice about. And you attracted friends and people who helped you, and you couldn't give up because you really had no choice. And that is the way I feel. So being told that I've been perseverant, you know, I think I credit the old police for that, the police that forced me to be perseverant because I didn't do anything for so many years. I just had to keep on working on this. And then finally, this lovely group of police in the last 5 years really got to work and fell in love with Scott and the mission they were on. And that's why they're here at their own expense in America at this premiere. And it's really pretty amazing part of the story.
Never Let Him Go on Hulu now. And it is a 4-part series and it is a terrific story. And it's so great to see, you know, a guy like Steve, a family member, make this thing. But I want to say one thing. When he said, you know, you were given this mission, you had to, you know, you had to accept. You were given this mission because of what happened. But you know what? That's true of every LGBTQ person. We didn't choose to, you know, be different or anything. We are. And when we discover it, you know, our lives change. We are given a mission. We're going to have to spend most of the rest of our lives fighting with the rest of society over the way we're treated. I mean, I didn't set out when I was a little kid to be a gay activist, you know, that's the way my almost 70 years have gone.
And I think it's important also to recognize that, you know, the reason, one of the reasons why this story comes to such a wonderful, successful conclusion is because Stephen, the brother, had a lot of resources at his disposal because he was very successful in, you know, the tech world. He had sold his company for like $100 million or something like that. So he could afford to pursue this. He was able to make the connections to politicians, American politicians who had the reach to reach down to Australia. So
yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but for instance, exactly when the case is lagging, he hires the guy, the reporter who investigated the JonBenet Ramsey case, who was a real, you know, great reporter. And he sends him to Australia to stir the pot. And the first thing that the guy discovers is, although the police, when they investigated the murder, they said, oh, no, this wasn't a gay cruising area. He talks to just people, the guys who work at the factory right next to the area. And they say, oh, yeah, the gays are in there all the time. And they're all just getting beaten up and everything like that. So the police did a terrible job in the beginning because they didn't care. police were very anti-gay, and the amount of anti-gay violence in and around Sydney was appalling in those days.
I had to refresh my memory about the case, and I don't want to give too much away about the series, but when I read the story and about the other things that had happened there around it, I was shocked at the numbers and what had been going on. So I'm hoping to see it. I may have to get Hulu so I can see it.
Okay. All right. So now we want to hear from you about, Anne has already given us her review. We want to hear your review of Bottoms.
How did I miss Anne's review? I watch KUSA every week. Maybe I missed a week or something. I thought it was great. I loved it. Normally sex-fueled high school comedies aren't my thing, but twisted high school comedies like Heathers and Mean Girls is definitely my thing. And this has a wonderful twist in that it's from a lesbian, unabashedly lesbian point of view. It's over the top. It's not meant to be taken literally. For example, the football players who are kind of the villains of the whole thing, you never see them outside of football uniform. They are always, always have their jerseys on. It's not meant to be realistic. It's meant to be fun and over the top and stupid. And basically, these two lesbian women, the two lesbian girls at the bottom of the social ladder in high school, decide they're going to get some sex by starting a girls' fight club. And it just goes from there and spins out of control. And it does include a former NFL running back, Marshawn Lynch, has a great supporting role in it. Very funny. But the reason why he took the role is because his sister is lesbian. And he said himself that he wasn't always supportive back in the day in high school when she first came out. And now they're all good. But he felt like this was a way of paying it back to her. So that's one of the reasons why he agreed to do it. It's co-written by the director, Emma Seligman, who is openly gay. So
who says there's no good news on Gay USA? We have Chris Cooper here with his great year of success. We have this new movie with all these people and people repenting and winning cases and all that kind of stuff.
We have Cassandro coming out soon, coming out this weekend.
Yes. Where is it coming out? In theaters?
In theaters, starring Gael Garcia Bernal, about the luchador in Mexico who was openly gay.
Yes, so we're looking forward to that. And anything else? What's next on your agenda, Chris?
Oh, who knows? I can't keep track of me.
Well, it's been great to have you here. And again, go to our website, gayusatv.org. If you support what we're doing, help us out. And or sign up for our emails at gayusatv.org. We much appreciate it.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Andy.
We have 10 seconds, as Amy Goodman would say.
10 seconds to say thank you for watching Gay USA.
We really appreciate your spending your time with us.
Bye.